Kate Sweeney is an NPR producer and also author of a new book called American Afterlife, Encounters in the Customs of Mourning. Kate, you've picked an interesting topic for this book, especially since you live in the South.
I think that no matter what region I live in, I might have been drawn to this, but it certainly helps that the first place that I covered that sort of led to the rest of the book was the first green burial cemetery in the nation, which is actually located in Westminster, South Carolina. So things just kind of snowballed from there. But yeah, it did turn out to be sort of a fertile place, if you will, in terms of at least getting my start in terms of this death journey, if you will.
Well, I was wondering, since you brought up the green burial cemetery, I was going to get to that later, but what is a green cemetery?
Green burial is burial that does not involve anything that does not biodegrade completely. So that means no metal clasps on caskets, no vaults, because those are often made of metal or concrete, and no embalming. And green burial is actually a rising trend in this country. When I started covering green burial, sort of following it, in 2007, there were four dedicated green burial cemeteries in the United States. At my last check in November 2013, when I checked in with the Green Burial Council, there were 40 green burial cemeteries in the United States. So, I mean, this is really a huge trend.
And the book begins with a visit to the Museum of Funeral Customs in Springfield, Illinois, which I think is now closed.
It is, which puts a pang in my heart because John Austin, the curator who, you know, founded and really put his heart and soul into that place, he loved what he did so much, and you could tell when you visited.
And what kind of things were in it?
Oh, my goodness. How much time do you have?
So well, it must have been great background for the book, your research.
Oh, it was. It was so neat. Most people, apparently, it turns out it takes them, like, 40 minutes to walk through the museum, and it took me a few hours because I enjoyed it so much. One thing that it really showcased was the way that mourning really took place in the United States about 150 years ago in the 1800s, which was so different from how we do things today. I mean, this was the period in the nation's history that really invented mourning, the way we kind of think about it in the back of our minds today. So those mourning periods when people are wearing all black, cemeteries as places that we would go and visit and spend time in, and even the deathbed scene. And I will say that the museum also had some really fascinating objects like jewelry made from human hair, which was a really big thing in the 1800s. People were kind of wild for hair jewelry.
There was a great graphic of a funeral quilt, which I had never seen before.
Yeah, these were popular in colonial times. So if you picture a quilt with the image of a graveyard stitched into the center, all around the border of the quilt, people would cut out the shapes of coffins and stitch onto each one the name of a loved one, a family member, and that would be along the outside of the quilt. And then when the person died, that coffin would get moved to the center where the graveyard was in the quilt. And if you think that that is a little bit morbid and a little bit strange, I saw parallels today with almost all of these old traditions, and I was in a tattoo shop talking with a woman who does a lot of memorial tattoos, and she was making a memorial tattoo on the back of this biker named Randy, and what it looked like was a graveyard scene with empty gravestones with no names on them. And she told me that when each of his biker buddies died, he would come back into the studio and get that individual's name tattooed onto his back. So I saw that, and then later I read about the colonial graveyard quilt, and just a light bulb went off, and I thought, oh my goodness, it's just like the biker tattoo. And that happened again and again when putting this book together, and it was really wild.
Right, and you also mention Edgar Allan Poe and the Civil War.
Yeah. So in the 1800s, I mean, you had, as far as Poe goes, you know, you think of him as being sort of the original goth, right? Because he was a gothic writer, indeed. And the romantic era, when people were very sort of culturally interested in quest and thought, thinking of nature and questions of the life-death divide, you know, you saw that in the poetry of people like Wordsworth. And then sort of on the darker side of that, people like Edgar Allan Poe, you know, who'd actually write about being in love with people in who were, you know, in their grave. And this is the era in which the good death was so important. And this was this notion of people dying well, dying at home, surrounded by family, and ideally, since it was an evangelical Christian notion to begin with, sort of being saved before they died. But really, dying at home, surrounded by family, became a hugely important sort of cultural idea. And you mentioned the Civil War, and that really wrought havoc on the good death because people were dying far away from home and in circumstances that people knew were highly unpleasant, but they actually didn't know the circumstances of their loved one's death, of these soldiers and people dying so far away from home. And so fellow soldiers would write letters to the folks back home telling the stories of their family member's death and often kind of, you know, embroidering a little bit and saying so-and-so died well and he closed his eyes and he mentioned all of you before he died and, you know, maybe he saying something about him sort of being saved before he died even. So these ideas were very, very popular in the 1800s, and then things really changed around the turn of the 20th century, and those changes are really having kind of major effects on how we do death today and what I saw in the stories of people I followed today.
Could you talk about the history of the Memorial Day weekend practice of visiting family grave sites and cemeteries?
In the 1800s, this was the time when the cemetery was really invented as a place where you would go visit and spend time. Before then, graveyards existed, but graveyards were places where we buried our bodies and then left and didn't really spend any time there. But in the 1800s, there was this overcrowding of graveyards all across the Western world, and it was a big health concern. And then one ghastly night in Paris, in I think it was 1790, there was a graveyard that was so overcrowded that it actually burst through the walls of a basement of a neighboring apartment building. And so that sort of was the shot heard around the world when it came to people deciding we need a new way to do this. And the Grand Cemetery was invented. Places like Père Lachaise in Paris and Mount Auburn Cemetery here in the United States, Oakland Cemetery in Atlanta, Georgia, these great places that were really precursors to public parks. These were green spaces where people would actually visit and plant gardens on their loved ones' graves and spend time there. You know, as I already mentioned, this was the Romantic era, and people were interested in these questions of sort of the life-death divide. The rise of evangelical Christianity was really a big deal in the United States, and so for the first time, people were conceiving of heaven as a place of reunion with their family members. And so visiting cemeteries really took on this extra emotional and religious significance for so many people. And so on weekends and so forth, people really would spend a lot of time in cemeteries, picnicking there and even courting with their sweethearts there.
Could you talk about roadside memorials and any laws that you know of about them?
Absolutely. So I first started covering roadside memorials because in my town, as sort of happens in so many towns around this country, there was this controversy happening with roadside memorials. There'd been a spate of car accidents, and then there were a whole lot of roadside memorials sort of erected. And, you know, there were some people saying that we should honor these roadside memorials and the family's right to them. And then there were other people saying, well, this is not the place for grief. Grief should happen in a cemetery or in a funeral home. I sort of took the bird's eye view. Okay, what is the deal with roadside memorials in this country? And I found that every single state has a different law when it comes to roadside memorials. In some states, it is illegal to have a roadside memorial inside the highway right-of-way. And in other states, it's illegal to have a roadside memorial unless it's in the highway right-of-way. In some states, roadside memorials must be these official placards that you buy from the state. And in some states, the death must be caused by a drunk driver. And in other states, drunk driving isn't allowed to be involved in the incident at all if you have a roadside memorial. So what it means to me is this question of where should mourning take place? Should it be limited to traditional spaces of mourning? The funeral home, one's own home, or the cemetery? And we see this debate arise again and again about grieving. Should it be kept private? Is it okay if it is maybe a little bit more public?
Well, it's a great book. Thanks so much for visiting with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee. It's been a real pleasure.
I've been speaking with Kate Sweeney, who is an NPR producer and author of the book American Afterlife, Encounters in the Customs of Mourning. You can find a link to the book at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.
Talk about suffering here below, and let's keep a loving Jesus. Talk about suffering here below, and let's keep a following Jesus. Oh, can't you hear it, brother? And don't you want to go and leave this world of sorrow and troubles here below? The gospel train is coming. Now don't you want to go and leave this world of sorrow and troubles here below?